Have you heard the birds sing, the trees breathe, and the rain fall? The stories we tell ourselves are what create our reality. Hi, I'm Julia, your host, and you're listening to Terra Stories, the podcast that will awaken your mind to new perspectives, to reconnect to yourself, to nature, and to become an actor of change in tomorrow's world.
It's an amazing space to be. Then the shades, the trees, it's evergreen. You never see a dry mangrove. And when you walk deeper or inside the mangroves, you find the buds. It's just like a refreshing scene or breath of beauty of these wild ecosystems that we neglect them, and they're very important. So you find a lot of animals there, monkeys, crabs, prawns, fish as well. And it's just a beautiful ecosystem that I fell in love with.
Dorcas grew up in Kenya, where her father instilled in her the value of planting trees. His farm was full of trees and coffee plants. Dorcas also recalls the generational stories that were passed along. They once had forests full of trees that have now been cut down. This story sparked a deeper appreciation for nature within her. While she once overlooked tree cutting on farms, believing it would bring other benefits, Dorcas' perspective shifted over time. With eye-opening studies in marine science management, Dorcas founded the Mazingira Pamoja Initiative, dedicated to empowering women and girls. Among its projects, the initiative focuses on restoring mangroves on Funzi Island. What are Dorcas' experiences in planting mangroves with local communities? And why does she view forest ecosystems as essential? Let's dive into Dorcas' passion for mangrove trees. Hi Dorcas, I'm so happy to have you here on Terra Stories. I'm so happy we met and that you'll share amazing information about beautiful trees, about beautiful ecosystems to our audience. If you want to present yourself to the people that don't know you yet.
Okay, so I'm Dorcas Wakiyomugo. I'm a climate activist from Kenya, based in a place called Diani. It's one of the most tourist attraction places because of the beautiful sandy beaches and the beautiful weather as well. I'm a founder of Mazingira Pamoja Initiative, whereby we run projects in terms of women and girls empowerment, where we educate them on the menstrual hygiene practices, about why they should avoid, you know, early pregnancies, early child, you know, early girl child marriages, for them to keep them in knowledge on how they can sustain themselves in school. And also like supplying them with pads, because what you have learned that from my area is that most girls are missing out from school because of lack of access to these menstrual kits. And when I was growing up, I used to receive these kits from the government in school, but right now they don't receive any pads from the government anymore. So we are trying to push that as well to see how we can have like free pads supplied in schools back again. And also we run programs in school as well to create awareness on climate change, whereby we work with the young girls, not the both genders now, young girls and boys, is going to keep them on as things that we can do as young as they are in terms of taking care of the environment. So we conduct climate lessons in terms of arts, videos, whereby we try to see how they view or envision climate change and how they have seen it affecting their homes. And what they can do, like now planting trees, you know, campaigning for beach, you know, plastic pollution, like such things. And also now currently we are working with the mangroves and we work in terrestrial mangroves in a place called Fuzi Island with our 72 women who are actively participating in the restoration programs. And yes, I'm happy to be here, and also I'm a trace ambassador of Population Matters. It's a UK-based charity organization that helps to create awareness on how people and nature can live in harmony.
I'm just curious why girls don't have any more access to period packs as you had when you were a child. Do you know why?
I think it's the rate of corruption is too high. So you find, like, when you go to these conferences, we are promised, like, money is going to be released, or money has been released to go to the, as we have county government and local county government. So what they do is, what the money comes from now from the main government, when it goes down the stream, getting lesser as possible. And when it gets to this local government, you have to apply a long process to get to this, funding. And when the money comes, obviously, it goes to people's pockets. That's why.
You have amazing experience and you did so many things. And I can't wait to dive into what you're doing more. But before, I like to talk about childhood, understand where does everything come from, So if you'd like to, would you like to share a bit of insights into your childhood? How did your love for nature develop? What is the cultural relationship between your country, its people, and nature?
So I always say, when I was growing up, I didn't have much idea on what even environment means. I could just study it in class, but not that deep into understanding the actions part. So I wouldn't even care if someone cut down trees in their farms. I was like, okay, maybe I'm doing it for something else. I wouldn't care when people are throwing plastics everywhere, and I'm done taking my cup of juice or tea. I used to just dump it anywhere because of lack of enough knowledge. But now my father is really into conservation. So he used to tell me that it's good to plant trees. He plants a lot of trees. His farm is full of trees and coffee. So it is in him. So I learned that from him as well as growing up. Then now when I went to now my university, that's back in 2017. And now when I was doing now my course in marine science and management, that's what now, this was an eye-opener for me. Because what that teaching us about how, in some courses, some units, was about how people have neglected our nature, and the consequences of our actions has really led to depletion of our marine ecosystems. And that's what it was like, wow, I need to start now, working out and see if my actions are really causing an effect to my environment. And then from then on, we and my friends, we were five of us, we sat down together, and it was during this World Environmental Day back in 2017 that the school organized, our vice chancellor came to school and we planted trees, and that's when now the passion was ignited. And then also seeing people our Kenyan activist called Elizabeth Wathuti, and also learning from late Professor Wangari Maathai. So this pulled me, and I was like, wow, I have a lot to do. And that's when the passion started. And from then now we found our initiative called Mazingira Pamoja, and just been doing amazing. And if I can just close my eyes, I think it's my passion for environment is so deep right now, and I'm fully committed to taking care of the environment from since 2017 and everything. And then now when it comes now the culture on how our culture and community and everything with nature coincides, you find now, as I told you earlier, we have now having generational stories in terms of that's being passed from parents who tells you this point we had a forest full of trees, and now you see it has been cut down. So through the cultural stories, it has really brought a sense of stewardship in terms of sense of responsibility as a person, whereby we're happy when we are preserving our natural resources. And And we have learned this from people like Professor Wangari Maathai, who inspires most of the climate activists in Kenya. We also have like things like their sacred forest. We call them Kaya, and maybe you can look at them, sacred Kaya forest. These are one of the forests that are preserved in by the indigenous people within Kenya. And the elders to perform the rituals, we still have like days where you can go to those forests and you can get to learn about when what species are found there, why we need which indigenous species are found there, and why we need to protect them. And this has created a sense like people need to take care of the environment, because this only place we have, and we have to live in harmony with everything that exists in the environment. We also have in terms of community gatherings, in terms of outdoor activities like hiking, picnics. We have like green spaces within our towns that are coming up slowly, where people have time to go and just connect and reconnect with the nature. Some forests we have here, they're very nice. They don't have animals, just like walk, maybe cycle. You can feel, you know, the birds in the air, the calm water, you know. So all this brings us closer to environment and nature. Thank you.
It's beautiful. I just saw the Kaya forest, and I think it's very beautiful. Are there still indigenous peoples that are protecting them, or not anymore?
We have the one, because actually they even documented in the government in terms of the forestry department. So they are the ones of the most protected forests we have in Kenya, because they are sacred and they continue. You know, people, there are people who still do their rituals. They are like the elders. We call them the elders of the Kaya. When you have a look at them, you'll find them. And mostly they coexist in these southern parts of Kenya.
Okay. And do you know, I don't know if you have the answer and it's right, but do you know why you've been cut from this knowledge and this wisdom? Like, I know that the Western culture, I know that I was cut from ancestral knowledge. A lot of my friends and family was cut from this knowledge. Do you know why in your country it was like this too?
I think it happens because of new technology has really brought new techniques on how to view things. The more people, like the old people who are full of knowledge, you find like now they are left back in the rural areas. So you find like they die with the whistle. The young people, we have all come to the towns, the cities, and you find like that's a disconnection between now the knowledge, the indigenous knowledge from reaching to us. So you find like when they die the knowledge, and you find that now are the young people, they are left just a little knowledge of what really existed in terms of the environmental stewardship and everything. And then now the technology.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's beautiful that, for example, your dad passed on this love for nature, even if it's not knowledge that our ancestors had, starting from just reigniting a passion within being in nature's presence. I think it's very important, and that's what you're doing within your project and initiatives in planting mangroves and and in educating people on doing so. What is for you the important role of communities in there, and why is it important to just give a hand on the people that don't have our knowledge and give it and pass this knowledge to them?
I believe the communities are the best people who know about these mangroves, because they live with them, they are so connected with them, the information relies on them because they've been taking care of them since the mangroves, or since they found the mangroves. So what happens, working with the communities has been so effective. Like, I also get to learn from them some of the things, because I don't know everything. So community are full of wisdom in terms of the mangroves. And the women I'm working with in Funze, they began this protection of mangroves when they found how the mangroves in that particular area had been destroyed due to them people looking for timber, for building houses, we're looking for firewood, and there's also fear of, in terms of flooding, what happens, because they just live near the ocean, and the mangroves act as barriers to these wave actions. So they began this process of restoring the mangroves, and but now due to lack of support, sometimes they tend to give up, but it's in them, the passion for taking the environment, it's in them, and that's what pushes them to take on these ecosystems. And I think the role of communities is very crucial in terms of, so the decision making is very important, because sometimes you find there's some, maybe like some people can come to them and tell them this is what you're doing is good. But like now, for example, when you have like these big conferences, you find they're not invited, and they're the ones who know what actually happens to these mangroves. They're the ones who know what's going on. So you find like they're neglected in terms of decision making. That's why you find like they suffer from, they have the knowledge, but the knowledge not being used to capacity in terms of bringing, in terms of policies and everything. But they're very key in terms of policy making, decision making, and in terms of safeguarding our mangroves or any other forest or ecosystem.
Do you remember a piece of wisdom or advice that someone from the community gave you about mangroves? Maybe you don't, but if you do, I'm interested.
Yes. Yes, I remember the first time when we went to Funze with my team and we're planting mangroves, just like 300 mangroves, just to see how it's going to be and welcoming the women. And during the planting time exercise, they were so active, and I'm like, wow. And why are they like so forgotten? Because like the Funze women the women group that has been really like forgotten, but we also have like other groups we have in the coastal region that work with the mangroves, but they are well known. But for this few women, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to expose them outside there for them to receive coverage, because they're doing an amazing job. And when we went there, we also have like the men as well, but the number of women are higher than the men. So what happened at this particular time when we went, they took us in a very deep, long journey inside the mangroves. And up at the site, they were so active in the way they coordinated everything, the measuring of the spaces. I've never seen that. So that was kind of amusing. The way they planted trees in order in line, that was very amazing for me. And I was super excited to work with them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you saw the love, maybe. The love for what they were doing. And yeah, so you were saying, if I understood well, more women are participating than men, right? Do you think it's a good thing?
I can see that what happens is that in this part of the country, or in my country, you find like most women are so much into conservation and environment matters and the men. We're still trying to figure out why, but you find more women in conservation groups here, both in maybe in every part of the country. You'll find more girls, more women in environmental activism. So what we are trying to bring, we're also seeing like, you know, improvement in terms of the male gender coming up also as well in these environmental spaces. But now what happens is that you find like now we have now less women in terms of decision making. So that's what now brings an issue. But when it comes to the ground, hands on ground, you find men working hand in hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And there is like they know what is happening in the field, but they're not participating in like law changing. And I can really like understand why you love mangroves. My dream is to see a mangrove in my life. And they're powerful.
I think you should come to Kenya then over here.
Oh, my dream. Yeah, so those are trees that are really benefiting the ecosystem. Can you elaborate on this love for these ecosystems, their biodiversities? What emotions do you experience in working with them?
Okay, the mangroves, where I fell in love with mangroves when during my university, like during the courses, and after seeing how, of learning how, like, they are so underrepresented, even in COP, it is very hard to hear them being mentioned. So having this like passion and love for the mangroves, that's what pushed me. Like, I need to do something, I need to advocate for these mangroves. I need to let the world know that these ecosystems absorb carbon dioxide 10 times more than even the other forest. And that's what led me like to work so closely with communities in terms of the mangrove restoration. They are just trees, mangroves. They are guardians of coastal communities. Whereby you find like they save the coastal communities from flooding in terms of when you have like the wave actions, they're able to to foster a deep protection towards the coastal communities, and also in terms of stem being a nursery for marine life, where you find like this brings a joy as I witness firsthand the positive impact on both the environment and the people who depend on these ecosystems. Their roots are so, you know, they're so beautiful, like so like a new refreshment or something I've ever seen. Very huge roots and big roots, diverse habitats, and then the water, the soil is different from other soils. You know, engaging myself in these activities brings a sense or a spark of duty and passion. And I appreciate all the ecosystem and the need. That's why I find the need to protect the biodiversity for future generations as well. And also in terms of their unique habitats, like you find when you walk through, you find very fresh streams of water. During the low tides, you find fresh streams of water. You find crabs, very colorful crabs. Some of them are not harmful. Some of them are harmful, but then big ones. But the others, just like when you just hear footsteps, they just run away from you. So all these are, it's an amazing space to be. Then like the shades, the trees, it's evergreen. You never see a dry mangrove. So it's so cool when you walk deeper or inside the mangroves. You find the birds. It's just like a refreshing scene or breath of beauty of these wild ecosystems that we neglect them, and they're very important. So you find a lot of animals there, monkeys, crabs, prawns, fish as well. And it's just a beautiful ecosystem that I fell in love with. Yes.
I can imagine. I want to see them even more now.
Yes.
For the people that never saw a mangrove, on the cover of the podcast, you have a mangrove, so you can see the beautiful roots. But yeah, do you know, like, you can find them in Kenya, you can find them also in South America, right?
Yes, yes.
In your opinion, as you didn't have when, because of the culture you received and also because of the circumstances that happened in your country, like, but then you develop this connection with nature, you're reconnected, you remembered your connection to nature. How do you think people can reestablish a connection to nature and to forests?
Yeah. So how people can reconnect with nature? One is that we need to cultivate the mindfulness in nature that can be transformative. You know, we have been so much into our screens, our phones, you know, social media, which is good, but it's time now we go outside and connect with nature in terms of practicing outdoor activities, embracing the simplicity of nature. This can help individuals reconcile and discover their connection with the environment. And in terms of like going to these green spaces, walking in maybe like in the parks, you know, gardening, these moments are very meaningful, and this is a way that we can appreciate the natural world around them. It can also help in terms of people can start now engaging in community activities, projects, conservation projects, restoration projects that can foster a collective sense of responsibility for the environment. These will encourage people to work together to protect and safeguard the environments where they live in. And this now is going to bring people back to the connection between them and nature. In terms of our, you know, like now the urban areas, they are growing so rapidly, so we need more green spaces in the urban areas to promote a sustainable and lifestyle that can empower individuals to weave nature into their daily lives, naturally, and lasting a meaningful connection with the natural world, because that's what we've been lacking. We've been lacking green spaces in most urban areas. But now, with the new new initiatives, people are demanding for sustainable cities, green spaces are put at the forefront as well. Because we need people to understand that we live in nature. Nature depends on us and also depend on nature. So if we harm nature, it's going to harm us as well. If we take care of the nature, it's going to take care of us as well. We also need to have educational initiatives where people have programs in TVs or in schools or anywhere people can be advertised or taught about the importance of nature and what our role is in this nature. Whereby we should now understand the interconnectedness of ecosystems and the benefits that they can provide. And this can inspire individuals to actively seek ways to reconnect with nature and preserve nature. So all these can be helpful in terms of our daily lives and be able to reconnect back with nature.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I loved when you were saying that we are nature. So if we harm nature, we harm ourselves. And I think it's something that has to be written in every street of cities, you know, for people to remember. Yeah, and now we arrive to my last question. My favorite one is, what ancestor would you like to be? And what is the world you envision in the future?
From this question, I saw it in two ways. I understood in the first part, which kind of an ancestor would they like to maybe be? Maybe someone who I envision to be like them, who maybe left a good legacy, or in other words, myself as an ancestor. So if it's for myself as an ancestor, I would choose to be an ancestor who witnessed don't know sustainable practices are. My envision of a world where people are living in harmony with nature and where nature prevails and where people are reconnecting with nature and taking care of the environments that have been given to take care of, and also a global community where people are thriving together but we are working together to take care of this beautiful planet. And also a world where there is equality, there is empathy, there is cultural appreciation, whereby there's creation of a global community that cherishes diversity and works collaboratively for a better future. This would be an amazing legacy that I would love to leave.
Let's hope it will happen.
Yes,
it's starting. It's starting.
Yes.
Yeah. But I really believe of also collectively imagining a future, you know, a positive one. And I'm sure it has an impact on what will happen. So that's a great answer. And that's a beautiful thought. I don't know if you have something else to add to the podcast. Thing you didn't say that you would like to say?
Maybe what I would love to say is that we need everyone we need a collaborative effort in terms of safeguarding our environment on our planet. No one can work alone. It's not possible to work alone. So we need collaborative efforts to work together as we try to fight for our planet, for a better and sustainable future for us all. And it's important to know that no matter how small your work or your action is, it actually matters a lot. So we should not give up in fighting for our planet. Let's keep on advocating for what is justice and what is right. And I know we're going to have our transformative systems that are going to help us live in a sustainable way.
Well, that's a beautiful way to end the podcast. I feel like it's the podcast is a beautiful message of the collective and the community and being together. And
yes,
that's so important. And yeah, very inspiring. So thank you, Dorcas, for this moment together and also for the work you're doing. That is so important.
Thank you so much as well for this amazing podcast. And super excited to see the output. Thank you so much.
The podcast is coming to an end. Thank you so much for listening. You can find Terra Stories on Instagram at terrastories.studio and on LinkedIn. If you liked the episode, talk about it around you, share it with your friends. That's the thing that would give the biggest boost to the podcast. And don't hesitate to write me about the topics or personalities you'd like me to invite or address. I wish you a beautiful day or evening.